the studios, 2RPH in Sydney. This is 30 Laps with Dick. I'm Richard Lyon. Welcome to the week. When someone says Monaro to you, what do you think about? Mike Kelly? Geez, I hope not. No politics in this half hour. The Monaro Plain? Cooma? Bombala? Somewhere cool and pleasant. After all, Monaro means high plateau or high plain in its original Aboriginal origins. But this is a motoring show, so it's the GM Classic Monaro. This week, 30 laps. And let's look at the Monaro in and out and its history in Australian motoring history. And let's take it around some of the best drives in Melbourne now that we can get out of Sydney in this crazy COVID conglomeration we find ourselves. Travel, escapades and Monaros all this week in 30 laps. So, without any further ado, let's see what this Monaro is all about, shall we? This comes from the online publication Motoring in Australia in the 1960s. It doesn't appear to have an author, so it's attributed to Anonymous, our good friend. Motoring, the Holden Monaro in 1968. Billed as Australia's first homegrown sports coupe, the Monaro was a member of Holden's ambitious new generation HK range, launched in 1968. A clear and deliberate statement of national identity in its design, title and marketing concept. The Monaro was conceived and developed in an era of massive social and cultural change. It reflected a more exciting, youthful image and broke new ground by embracing the concept of personalised transport. Along with its HK counterparts, the Monaro delivered the biggest choice of options yet offered by Holden, and, with a full-throated roar, ushered in the golden era of the lion-badged V8. No relation to yours truly, I might add. The sleek, pillarless two-door was introduced 6 months after the rest of the range and soon took pride of place in the Holden dealer showrooms across the country. Its boy racer appeal was universal, a tribute to the foresight of the then managing director of GMH, Max Wilson, who was instrumental in the development of the Monaro design and engineering concept and who recognised its long-term potential. In late 1967, with 9 months to go until launch, Holden's new sports coupe was still without a name. Holden had shifted through hundreds of suggestions. None seemed to have that special ring. Then Noel Bedford, a technical stylist and member of Holden's design team, was driving through Cooma in New South Wales on holiday when a sign on the council offices took his eye. It said, "Monaro Country," in Western-style lettering that reminded me of Marlborough Country, and Camaro. It seemed to me so simple and logical. Why didn't somebody think of it before? I was quite excited and couldn't wait to get back to work after quickly checking for copyright and dialect, that is the meaning, I guess, an impromptu board meeting instantly approved the name. It was originally introduced in 1968 as a two-door pillarless hardtop coupe, based on the full-size Kingswood sedan and available in three models, the basic Monaro Coupe, the Monaro GTS Coupe, and the Monaro GTS 327 Coupe. The cars would be ordered with a choice of six-cylinder engines of 161 CI or 2.6 litre capacity, or two versions of the 186 CI or 3 litre capacity. GTS was the uprated 186S only, or a 307 CI 5 litre capacity Chevrolet sourced V8. Bit of a mouthful there. The exclusive GTS 327 model was powered by the Chevrolet 327 5.3 litre V8. Listen to this, there'll be a test at the end. In early 1969, the Monaro range was awarded the Wheels Magazine of the Year for 1968. The model then continued through two minor facelifts. First with the HT Monaro range released in 69, followed by the HG Monaro in 1970. With the HT, GTS 327 became GTS 350, following an increase in engine displacement with the fully imported V8 Chev engines. This was also an automatic version of the GTS 350 introduced, which used a lower point version of the 350 CI engine coupled to a two-speed power glide transmission. And there we'll leave that because it goes into more detail, which probably at the end of the day means not much to you or me. Some HT model Monaro GTS coupes, however, were exported or produced in South Africa from imported parts by the Thomas Bradford Company. Later, they were sold under Chevrolet SS name instead, with revised front styling unique to this model and incorporating four headlights and large turn indicators in the front edge of the fenders above the bumpers. Some or all of these had 350 5.7 litre V8 engines. A completely new generation body designed with the HQ in... I can remember the HQ. The HQ series in July 1971, including the new Monaro LS, commonly believed to mean luxury sports. There are no longer any six-cylinder versions of the Monaro GTS, just the 253 or optional 308 V8s, or the top-level GTS 350 coupe. The new coupe design had a much larger rear window and a squarer rear quarter window. It was somehow seen not as a sporty looking compared to the earlier HK, HT and HG series, but it is often now considered as one of the best looking body designs to come from an Australian producer. Until 1973, the GTS did not wear any body stripes. As such, the 350 motor was a little less potent than before, especially with the optional turbo hydromatic three-speed automatic transmission. This probably contributed to a downgrade of the Monaro in muscular image terms, as did the replacement of the bigger coupes with a six-cylinder powered Holden Torana GTR XU1, as chosen GM car for the Australian touring car racing. The introduction of a bonnet and boot lid paintouts in 1973 coincided with the release of a four-door sedan version of the Monaro GTS. A heavy facelift. We've seen that before, haven't we, folks? A heavy facelift, adding optional front and rear spoilers and the dropping of the base Monaro and top shelf GTS 350 and similarly powered LS coupe characterised the introduction of the HJ series in late 74. Monaro coupe was manufactured as Monaro LS and Monaro GTS, and the sedan version of the GTS carried through, often now proving more popular than the coupes. The HJ Monaro LS coupe is close to the rarest regular production car made in Australia. Only 300 were produced. They were approximately 600 HJ GTS coupes produced up until the introduction of the HX series in mid-1976. New emissions regulations heralded the HS Monaro GTS, and with it, the decision by Holden to cease manufacturing in two-door coupe form. So, to see it off, 580 examples of a 5-litre V8 limited edition coupe were produced, appropriately called the Limited Edition, or LE for short, and all painted with an exclusive metal colour called LE Red. Surprisingly, the LE was not referred to or badged as a Monaro, but in most enthusiasts' eyes, it was the last of the real thing. There is no Monaro coupe in the HX lineup, but the name was emblazoned on a single extroverted GTS four-door. Although the Monaro name survived into 1977, as the HX Monaro GTS, with some coupes, they're now part of history. Holden decided to delete the name altogether from its HZ Holden range with the development of the radial tune suspension. Holden transformed the bland characteristics, their full-size sedans, and introduced a sporting variety simply called GTS. But with the November 1978 introduction of the new mid to full-size VP Commodore and its availability with V8 power, the days of the HZ appeared numbered. The HZ GTS was, however, a great driver's car, and featured in a four headlight grille and front rear spoilers in its final year of production in 78-79, and had the 5-litre V8 fitted as standard equipment. Ultimately, the V8 Commodore proved very popular in both six-cylinder and V8 form, such that all full-size HZ Holdens were phased out of production in 1979-80. To be replaced only in panel van, ute, one-tonner form, and the totally revamped Statesman sedans in the compressed WB Holden range released in April 1980. That's a track called I Go Wild, and they sure went wild over the Monaro. And we thank Motoring in Australia and Anon for their piece on the Holden Monaro in 1968. A bit of Australian motoring history. But hey, look at this, straight off the press, from Charlie Bullis, drive.com, from Sydney Morning Herald, on the 29th of January. The new school year is upon us, and the fun of the school run. We better have a look at this. Getting the kids back into their school routine is a challenge, whether it's their first or their last year. Between lunchboxes, bags, which socks they should be wearing that day, and where on earth did they put the 100th water bottle you've bought them this term. Even the most patient parents can find themselves quickly descending into stress, overload, and saying everything through gritted teeth. And it's not even 8 o'clock in the morning. So what can our cars do to help us on that wonderful speed of light run to school? Let's begin with a few things you can put in your car for a rainy day. Literally, umbrellas. This one's obvious, but one umbrella in your car is never enough. Save yourself the pain of an umbrella to the eye, as our darling children insist on holding the shared shelter themselves, only to have none of it covering you while nearly hitting every other person in the face as they walk by. Put a large umbrella in the car for you and a smaller one for the kiddies. Plus, it's good to have a backup if a gust of wind decides to wreak havoc on your solitary rain protection dash. Reusable bags for wet and dirty clothes. Ugh. It's quite likely that the day after you have cleaned your car inside and out, it will rain. Be prepared for kids' muddy shoes, wet clothes and umbrellas, and have dedicated bags to put them in, protecting your weekend washing efforts. You can also lay the reusable plastic bags flat in your boot to put the wet bags and umbrellas mentioned before on top of. a wax melt air freshener. I've seen this on many a mum blog, but it's a goodie worth mentioning. Put your favourite smelling wax melt into a container that fits in your centre console cup holder. It gets hot inside your car, melting the wax and releasing the smell. Happy days. Rid yourself of that after school sweat smell forever. Why are kids always sticky too? According to fifthsense.org.uk, smell has the ability to boost our mood and regulate emotions too, which is quite handy when ferrying grown-ups around. If you want to DIY your own, there are plenty of things on Google. Snacks. Anyone that has been around a child for more than 5 minutes knows how important snacks are. But arriving at school pickup without a small snack to get them through the drive home or commute to other after-school activities is equivalent to Bear Grylls without his backpack. You are heading into the wilderness completely unprepared and likely to meet a grizzly bear. Have some snacks on hand in your car or ready to grab as you walk out the door. I prefer an apple in a container for the half-eaten sticky core, small packs of crackers or healthy snack bars. Checklist. If I had a dollar for every time we got halfway to school and realised we'd forgotten something, well, I'd have about 15 bucks, but it's extremely annoying. So I implemented an in-the-car checklist to go through before we leave the driveway. The checklist lives in the car and includes library and sports, uniform days, as well as lunchbox reminders. Yes, and it takes an extra 30 seconds, but I'll pay for that peace of mind and combat halfway to school and back shock any day. This is a good one. Kiss and drop trial run. Practice makes perfect, or at least prepares you for what you need to expect. As COVID-19 restrictions continue, parents aren't expected to be allowed back inside the school gates anytime soon, making the kiss and drop our only option for the foreseeable future. From personal experience, the first kiss and drop can be daunting for both parent and child and a major source of anxiety for all. So, hop in your car the day before school starts and do a trial run without time pressures and a long line of cars waiting behind you. It's time well spent and will help everybody feel prepared for the real thing. New York Times journalist and author of the Foster Parent Diary series, Megan Mokovic-Volbert, says practice builds a new chain in your brain. And the good news is the more you practice, the thicker the chain gets. So take some time to familiarise yourself with school rules around the kiss and drop zone. And make it fun for the kids by singing songs and maybe grabbing a treat on the way home. Don't expect perfection the first time or even the 500th time, but trust that it will become second nature eventually. The Get Ready Signal. Keep with the practice theme. This one was a personal game changer and removed the need to repeat "time to get ready" what feels like a million times as the kiss and drop bay draws nearer. Find an agreed reference point, song or hand signal, so your kids know it's time to gather their things. Turn off iPads if needed and be ready to get out of the car. Well, not removing seatbelts yet, of course. For my son, I use the local shops near his school. He knows when he sees them, it's time to make sure he has his big boy's bag ready, his hat on his head. School is approaching. I stole this idea from my son's playing a song before the traditional school bell. My son's school, I should say, playing a song before the traditional school bell. As soon as the kids hear it, they know the bell is about to go. So they gather their things and start heading towards their classroom, and voila! Nagging be gone. Curate a before school playlist. Just like smells, songs can be a great mood booster and get you in the right headspace for a productive day. Set the tone and help you will all feel good about the day ahead by creating a help list of songs you all enjoy and can listen on the way to school. Yes, you might need to throw in a couple of Disney songs amongst your favourite tunes, but it's not a bad idea to take Elsa's advice and let it go first thing in the morning. Bag hooks. Ever seen those hooks in your boot and thought, wow, that's a good idea? Yep, me too. But once I actually started using them, you're not alone. They work perfectly for keeping school bags upright and, almost importantly, pesky water bottles from leaking pesky water. Bags in the front seat. If you don't have hooks in your boot, there is another way. Put the school bags on the front passenger seat or on the floor. Your kids can jump out of the back, open the passenger door, and grab their bag. It saves you hopping out to open and close, open and close, open and close the boot. And kids don't need to struggle to get out of their seat while lifting their bag with them. Keep calm and obey school signs. During the school run rush, it can be hard to keep your cool. The sheer volume of cars and students in the area can be stressful, even before trying to get your kids to exit the car in a condition that resembles a human. For the safety of everybody, remember, obey the speed limit. Most traffic zones are 40 kilometres an hour for a set period of time. Always be vigilant. Kids are not always mindful of vehicles or safe around vehicles. Don't leave your vehicle when using the drop-off pick-up sign section. If your children are not ready for pick-up, taking more than 2 minutes, that is, do a lap and return once they are ready. Be calm. Showing any kind of road rage or aggression to other parents during pick-up is not a good example to set for your little ones. And if you park away from the school, walk with your kids. This is a great time to converse and bond with the little fellas. From all us parents at drive.com, good luck. So thanks to Charlie Bullis and his very interesting and informative piece from drive.com.au, the Sydney Morning Herald, dated the 29th of December. I beg your pardon, the 29th of January 2021.
Sweethearts together, we've only just begun.
If you take a couple of those ideas from Charlie, everyone in the car will be sweethearts together. Well, it'll start that way. It's always a good idea to start as we mean to finish, even if we don't finish the way we started. Onwards, sticking with Drive, from the 23rd of December last year, all Melburnians emerged from their extended lockdown. Record numbers are planning to hit the road to blow out the cobwebs over Christmas and continuing into this year, thus making this article still topical. But where can you escape the crowds? We've wrapped up 5 of the best drives from Melbourne, so get ready for a day trip. And if you live in Sydney, get ready for a plane trip and then get ready for a day trip. New research has revealed that more than 60% of Australians are planning road trips in 2020. Unsurprisingly, as international borders remain closed and the price of domestic flights soar, that was a full stop, sorry, so that's flights, domestic flights soar. We'll get it right eventually, folks, hang in there. Although the usual tourist spots will likely see a rush of high-spirited holiday makers, don't ditch your road trip plans yet. A recent report found around half of Aussie drivers prefer to use the most direct route to their destination, sticking to motorways. This means that by taking the road less travelled, You can discover quiet and incognito locations just a short drive from the city. To help you plan your merry excursion, or exclusion for that matter, our Melbourne team have given their tips for the best day getaways the region has to offer, and only a couple of hours driving from Melbourne. Note, while we've taken care to find locations that are both COVID safe and accessible, we advise online check for current alerts before travelling to any of the destinations. Took so long for that preamble, folks. We've probably only got room for one destination today, but we will do the others in a show very shortly when we have a bit more time. So let's start with the Mornington Peninsula. Our Melbourne team unanimously, all of them agreed, the Mornington Peninsula should be at the top of the day trip must-do list, with plenty of good reasons why. Just 75 k's south of the CBD, you can be in the heart of the Mornington Peninsula hinterland in an hour, opening up a range of spots to explore. First-time visitors should make a beeline for the seaside town of Dramana, where they can join Arthur's Seat Loop Scenic Drive, taking them through the beautiful hinterland on their way up to the highest point on the Mornington Peninsula. Along the way, you might like to stop off at the many lookouts on the winding road to see Arthur's Seat Summit and pop into the early, pretty and historic Sea Winds Gardens. There are beautiful spots for walks like Cape Shank, along Shelley Beach, and stop offs at the Sunny Ridge Strawberry Farm. If a vineyard tour is on your Christmas wish list, check out the rolling vineyards and ocean views at Point Leo Estate before experiencing their cellar-door tastings and an outdoor modern sculpture gallery. That is all we have time for. So let's talk about the Mornington Peninsula in a bit more detail later on. That too was written by Charlie Bullis. He's a very busy boy this week in our show. From drive.com.au, the Sydney Morning Herald. Stay tuned for other destinations. Maybe you've got an old Monaro you can go for a drive in, hey? I'll give you some details in next week's show about what some of these Monaros that I've been talking about are worth in today's money. They're very expensive and very collectible, just like one of these shows being very listenable. Run out of time again, hey? Well, we'll continue on, as I mentioned before, next week. I've enjoyed your company this afternoon. I hope you've enjoyed what we've been going through today with the history of the Monaro and how to get your kids to school without killing them. I look forward to your company next week. Bye for now.